Every day, thousands of air traffic controllers keep the skies safe, guiding planes through takeoffs and landings and averting collisions. But it's day 25 of the government shutdown. For air traffic controllers across the country, that means it's day 25 of working without pay. On Friday, the National Air Traffic Controllers Association filed a lawsuit against President Trump and his administration. They charged that the shutdown has denied them pay without due process, making the group one of several government agencies to file suit over the shutdown.
Our inspectors, our technicians, our air traffic controllers, everybody that does their job day in and day out does the most important work ever. Safety of the flying public, right?
That was Professional Aviation Safety Specialist President Mike Perrone speaking at a rally at the Capitol Building in D.C. last week. Since then, furloughed federal aviation inspectors have been picketing outside of airports, and air traffic controllers have also been protesting. They even started handing out flyers yesterday about how the shutdown makes flying unsafe at airports serving Atlanta, Dallas, Raleigh, and Minneapolis. This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Trish Gilbert is the Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Trish, how is it going for air traffic controllers today?
Well, they're feeling a lot of anxiety, a lot of uncertainty, and it's a profession where you need 100% of your focus 100% of the time on the task at hand, which is ensuring the safety of flight. And unfortunately, when they're stuck in the middle of a political game or where somebody's trying to be a winner and it turns out those that are losers are the people just trying to do their jobs, and that's the people I represent. They're going to work. They're providing the service that they've all proudly want to do. Unfortunately, as they worked during the holidays, Christmas and New Year's, weekends, nights, they woke up, if they're not already at work, with zero in their paycheck for the work that they've done since the beginning of the year. One paycheck, I think most are makes them nervous that it's gotten to this point. I think the real concern comes is the uncertainty and when the next one's going to come. How long will this last? The months and years statement has just caused a lot of anxiety in a workforce that doesn't need to have that distraction. They need to be focused on the job that they're really proud to do.
Tell us a little bit about the lawsuit. What are the goals of this suit? We know that Congress approved a measure to offer back pay to furloughed employees, but as you said, air traffic controllers, the check is showing $0. So what is the lawsuit and what are the goals?
Correct. The back pay is, I don't think those that are going to work, I know that they're going to get paid. They realize they're going to get paid. They just don't know when. Those that are furloughed and sent home and not allowed to work, that was, uncertainty there. And so Congress did pass that provision. It hasn't been signed into law by the president. So there is a little comfort there for those that were forced home. But the lawsuit is based on what we believe is a violation of the Fifth Amendment, which is there was no due process when property was kept from the people, and we believe pay is their property. Once they've performed the work, they are due that pay.
Well, and obviously there was, you mentioned the Fifth Amendment. There was an op-ed in the New York Times yesterday that encouraged TSA workers to strike. One of the things they brought up there in this op-ed was that these workers have a moral right to strike because of the things that you are pointing out, that they've been forced out of the jobs that they have been hired to do.
Well, I can't speak to TSA and the conditions they're working under. I imagine they're very similar. I know my workforce, and I know that to them, this is not just a job they report to every day. And I'm not saying that's the case with TSA. I'm just saying that my members and are proud to do the work that they do for this country. It's 5% of the gross domestic product for this country. It's an economic engine for this country, and they proudly do it. They're aviation professionals that believe in flight and what flight brings to this country, moving the military through the airspace, passengers, general aviation, business aviation, and most importantly, air ambulance. They know they need to be to work so people can get to where they need to be so this country can keep moving forward.
I understand, Trish. I'm wondering if because of all of those things, because of the dedication that you're outlining, because of the fact that these folks have not been paid, because of the Fifth Amendment clause that you mentioned, and also this idea of a moral right to strike. I'm wondering, does that push the union any closer to approving a strike?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. We would never endorse or condone any kind of action taken that would take our work and our skills away from the task at hand. Absolutely not.
Trish, what's the breaking point then?
Well, that I think that's going to be different for every individual. You know, those that are in the lower pay scales that are not certified completely in the profession might look for employment elsewhere, especially in those living in high cost of living areas like Oakland, New York, Washington, D.C., Southern California. Those individuals will probably be the first to look for other things. I don't know how long different people are going to be able to go without a paycheck, but you can't expect it to last months and years. That people won't. They'll individually look for other employment. We already know of people that are looking for other employment. And we already know of people that are working second jobs at this point, which is really concerning because we are already 30-year low in staffing, meaning we have fewer fully certified controllers than we should, about 2,000. And they're working already mandatory overtime before this even occurred. So now they're working longer. And now not just longer providing air traffic control services, but driving Ubers before and after their shift. This is concerning to us, and it should be concerning to the American public as well.
And you also mentioned the staffing shortages. There is a shortage of air traffic controllers. 1 in 5 today are eligible to retire. Does that put an additional pressure on you all to kind of figure out what to do? Is there a question of trying to find new air traffic controllers? Are you looking at training for the folks who, as you said, you know, people can't go weeks and weeks and weeks without getting paid. So you could, I think, see more folks leaving the industry.
This is going to be long lasting. Again, we were already short staffed. Now they've closed our academy in Oklahoma City, which is where our new hired individuals start their career. They start their training. It takes 2 to 3 years to certify as a controller. So it's not something you can do overnight. It takes some time. And then you mentioned 1 in 5 are eligible to retire. And out of frustration, they might actually do that. And we're very concerned about that. So we will be feeling the effects of this long well after the government does open. But we certainly, it's not sustainable where we're at now. We're really going to have to work very, very hard to focus on training and hiring once we get out of this. Otherwise, the system will start to feel capacity issues. Those that fly will start to feel the delays in the system when we're not able to staff our radar rooms and our towers across the country.
I think we're already starting to see evidence of some of that with just social media photos and things that people are posting. You know, historically, I mean, there was a strike in 1981 of air traffic controllers that forced the country, I guess, to understand what their concerns were and what they did. Do you see any parallels with that strike in 1981 to what's happening today?
It's completely different. That was a disagreement between the union and their employer. This happens to be a disagreement between an administration and Congress and has nothing to do with aviation. So we're kind of stuck in the middle. The members that I represent aren't partisan. Aviation's not partisan, and they don't have an opinion on this political argument that's occurring. They do expect their leaders, those that work for us in government, to figure this out. We expect them to get to yes, not to get to an impasse and stay at this impasse. If there was any kind of indication that they were getting closer together instead of further apart, I think our members could start to relax and focus better on their job.
I feel like this will be a redundant question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Where do air traffic controllers go from here? You know, given the standstill that you've outlined, and I think that we're all experiencing and witnessing, this feels like it could be a pretty severe blow to the industry.
It is. It could cause irreparable harm, and nobody wants that in aviation. We have the aviation industry is completely in line with opening the government and not hurting the system any more than they already than it's already been hurt. But where do we go from here? You know, we're talking to the media as much as we can. We're at airports across the country, 60 airports. Our air traffic controllers that are furloughed or they're going before or after work, and they're handing leaflets to the flying public, taking our message to them so they understand that this shutdown does affect the entire country. It does not just affect federal employees. The ripple effect to those that, you know, depend on the federal government being at full capacity, they're also impacted, and that's concerning as well. Eventually, we'll feel it throughout, but right now, our membership is taking that message to the airports. We've been on the Hill as well, meeting with our members of Congress. They're bringing their stories to them, their concerns to them, and we're asking them to act. We're asking them to end the shutdown today. It's just unreasonable to expect that people would go for months and years to work without receiving a paycheck.
Trish Gilbert is Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Trish, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Tanzina.
All right, your turn. Do you support protests or strikes by federal employees during the shutdown?
Hi, my name is Jonathan. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. I absolutely support the federal workers for standing up for themselves. Being a federal government worker does not in any way dissolve their civil rights. They're still allowed to speak out. They still have First Amendment rights against their employer, even if it happens to be the government.
Hi, this is Natalie calling from Brandon, Florida, with regard to protests by government employees during the shutdown. I agree and disagree. I disagree if it jeopardizes the U.S. safety and security, but then I agree with their right to peacefully protest because it's protected under the First Amendment.
This is Mark from Beaverton, Oregon. This is a tough call, but these federal employees are real people who need to eat and everything else as well. The elected officials who run the government must understand the consequences of shutting it down.
Hey, this is Jess in Omaha. I would absolutely support the air traffic controllers putting a stop to working. It's a super high-pressure job with lives in their hands. The government shouldn't be shut down in the first place. So if the air traffic controllers want to also stop in order to pressure a government that seems to forget it's for and by the people, then so be it.
Peter Dumont, Berkeley, California. In general, I think too many people who do public service, sometimes as self-appointed volunteers for years on end, are taken far too much for granted.
Give us your take by calling 877-8-MY-TAKE or find us on Twitter. We're at The Takeaway. Stay with us. We're going back for a moment to August 1981. With the government unwilling to meet their demand for a $10,000 raise, the Air Traffic Controllers Union decided to strike.
All of those opposed to returning to work and staying out for as long as it takes to get a fair an equitable contract, signify by saying yes.
Yes!
In saying yes, they defied a law that makes it illegal for federal employees to strike. Ronald Reagan was in the first year of his presidency, and he came out with a hard-line stance against the strike.
They are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
But the union held its ground. Thousands of air traffic controllers picketed on the streets instead of watching the skies. Robert Poley, the president of the Professional Air Traffic Controllers Association, or PATCO, responded.
They're trying to break the union. I think they are trying to use every intimidation factor that they can to get the controllers to go back to work. I certainly do believe that they're trying to break our union.
Reagan brought in supervisors and military controllers and got 80% of flights running again. He stood by his word and fired 11,000 air traffic controllers for striking. Many of them were banned from the profession for life. To learn more about the 1981 strike and the effects that it still has on air traffic controllers to this day, I spoke with Barbara Peterson, the aviation correspondent for Condé Nast Traveler. Barbara is covering the shutdown and was also reporting on the strike back in 1981.
the system really was just dealt a body blow. Now, you have to remember the context, too. This was several years after airline deregulation. So there were new airlines popping up, new budget airlines that were offering low fares. And this almost put them out of business because basically the country's air traffic system had to contract by about 30%. The airlines were ordered just, okay, find the fat in your schedule and just cut it. So it took 3 years to get controllers trained and back in the jobs. They went up to about 9,000. And when you think that was down from 12,000, that's still pretty huge. And it took roughly about 10 years to really rebuild the system back to its previous capacity. But at the time, it was considered this pivotal moment, you know, because the president had said, you know, you're fired. We're not taking you back, no matter what. And when some controllers did want to come back, they were told no. They were actually barred from federal service of any type for years. So, you know, there's just nothing that we can even imagine today that would compare to that.
Of the air traffic controllers that are currently working today, about one in five or almost 2,000 folks are eligible to retire. Are those workers who started or who came in during the 1981 strike?
Well, they've gone through sort of several phases, I would say, since then. I mean, when you consider that it's almost 38 years ago, I mean, that was huge. And controllers can retire after 20 years or 25 years, depending on their age. And that means, you know, most of them do choose to do that. It's a very stressful job. There's a lot of burnout. And all of these issues, I think, are sort of ever present. And in the years I've been following this, the controllers have been at loggerheads with their employer, the Federal Aviation Administration, at many points. One of the lowest points actually happened during the administration of President George W. Bush. And they could not come to terms on a contract. And then when they really finally came at an impasse, the government imposed a pay freeze, and they imposed all sorts of work rules, and there was a lot of bad blood at that time. I remember there was a lot of discontent, and controllers were agitating them, but you know, they've always stopped short of calling for a strike because it's illegal. I mean, and you know, the memory of 1981 looms large.
This isn't the first time that air traffic controllers have sued during a shutdown. And as we mentioned earlier in the first segment here, this is not the first group of federal employees to sue the president and his administration for this shutdown. How effective are these lawsuits? Are they symbolic or do they actually have teeth?
Well, I think that what they do is they show, and at least for the rank and file anyway, what they're showing is that, yes, this is a really important job. And this is something where you can't keep on going with the same level of commitment, you know, if you don't know when you're going to get paid. I think it's a good way to get that message across. Now, I think that a lot of people believe that this can't go on much longer for a variety of reasons. So back to what the outlook is now is that this is having an impact on morale. I mean, how can it not, right? And we've seen in previous periods when the controllers and the FAA have been, you know, having contentious relationship, there's always going to be an impact. And we should be worried about that, I think, because already the controllers have been complaining about being short-staffed, that they don't have enough new hires coming in to fill the jobs that are opening up. You know, it takes about 5 years to get a controller really up to speed from when they start a training academy. So it's not something that where they can just rush in a bunch of replacements. And so really to get a fully trained workforce up, they, you know, it's going to take years. So I think what's happening now is that requiring these types of essential employees to keep on working without pay, it really is unprecedented. And so I'll leave it to the lawyers to come up with their own argument for that. But I would say that this does give them another, it's sort of a unique situation that might, you know, lead to something.
The other thing is, Barbara, is that we're seeing, I've read somewhere about the TSA workers specifically and how they're sort of calling in sick, as we've heard, to protest in that way. Do air traffic controllers protest in that way as well? I mean, is there sort of a blue flu, if you will, you know, resistance happening?
I haven't seen anything that would confirm that, though it has happened again in the past. There have been more like work slowdowns where you can really slow things down by the book, and that would also be a way of sending a message. So what I've heard so far is that the controllers still say, no, we, you know, we're professionals. We take this very seriously. We're responsible. We don't want to impact, you know, the system to the point where it affects safety. But, you know, when NATCA was formed, the current union NATCA, to replace PATCO, which of course was put out of business effectively by the 1981 strike, when they formed, they made a promise never to strike. That was one of the reasons why they were able to form a new union. So that still, I think, is an important influence in what their strategy is going forward.
Barbara Peterson is the aviation correspondent for Condé Nast Traveler. Barbara, thanks so much.
Thank you.